Well, it took 10 years to convince the donors to give enough funding to start implementing the planned breeding. Then the planned breeding process itself is about an 8 to 10 year process. That process was finished around 2012, and then we've released varieties. These varieties have been developed, and now they're released. We can sell them to farmers in 30 countries around the world, and they're in testing in another 25 countries.
So once you actually start planting and growing these crops, the cycle is in motion, as it were, that you can generate more seeds and plant more in the years ahead?
It depends on the crop. Some of the crops are hybrid crops. High iron pearl millet are orange maize or provitamin A maize. So the farmers are buying seed for each year or each crop. Other crops like beans, you can take the beans that you harvest and replant. The rice and the wheat, same thing. You can replant the seeds. But the biofortified varieties are exactly the same as the non-biofortified. It's the same. If it's non-biofortified pearl millet or maize, farmers have to buy the hybrid seed anyway.
You raise an interesting point there. So in no way are these crops genetically modified. This is a very different, and I presume a very natural process.
Yes, it's all conventional breeding. We're not using GMOs. I like to call them transgenic because that's a more proper term, but we're not using transgenic.
What about the ability of this type of crop, if we take the situation in Papua New Guinea in recent times when they've had extreme drought and many hundreds of food gardens have suffered as a result of water shortage and frost as well, but how drought-resistant, how frost-resistant are these crops?
Well, what we're trying to do is just piggyback on the best varieties that are coming out from the National Agriculture Research Institute. So as they breed varieties that are drought-resistant, better adapted to higher temperatures, so adapted to climate change, we piggyback on those best varieties by adding high iron, high zinc, high provitamin A to those best varieties.
So in theory, therefore, in the years ahead, this could be the perfect type of crop for a situation such as that that has been facing Papua New Guinea in recent times, crops that are not only tough but vitamin rich.
Correct. We're getting the plant breeders not to just give the best crops for the climate change and high yield, but they also need to pay attention to the nutrient content. They need to use agriculture to improve nutrition as well as keep productivity high.
Now, you mentioned the struggles you had in the early days of developing these particular crops and the reluctance of the investors to get involved, essentially. Now, of course, you've been awarded the World Food Prize for 2016. Must have given you a great sense of satisfaction to prove those people who were skeptical wrong once and for all.
Of course, it's great. The first point is that it recognizes our collective efforts. Scientists and implementing institutions all over the world have contributed, and so that's a great feeling to be recognized. But I think more importantly, we have a big job ahead to scale up these crops, get them widely adopted around the world. We have a target of reaching 1 billion people with these crops by 2030. And achieving the prize gives us more visibility, gives us more credibility, and gives us a better chance of raising the funding that we need to do that.
The way that you've described the whole process of biofortification, it would seem to be an absolutely logical next step to have these crops grown as widely as possible in the areas that need them most. But are there vested interests who would prefer that you weren't there?
I don't think so. We're just trying to get farmers to substitute one for one. Whatever they're doing now, whether they're putting on fertilizer or they're not putting on fertilizer, take the regular variety, take it away, and replace it one for one with the biofortified variety. So in terms of behavior change, there's not much to it.
And the potential impact on the world food situation, the nutritional situation, it could be enormous.
Well, if we are successful in reaching 1 billion people, then I feel it's one of the biggest nutrition interventions ever undertaken.